Let me give you a little story of myself as a young boy in Port of Spain, living in Traggeries Road, 147 Traggeries Road. I heard about the steel drums from people who passed by and said, Alexander Ragtime Band is playing garbage cans up in the yard they call, sorry, the big yard. That is Alexander Ragtime Yard. That is in near to the corner of Woodford and Traggery. And I was pretty young at the time and I heard that. I don't know what how they come about to be playing those drums. All I heard is the night, some carnival night before that, playing in the yard, some carnival night. They had some problem in Duke Street or whatever. And some fight ensued. And after the fight, this guy they call Lord Hamburger took up some garbage can and started playing on it to try to get his people back down to Port of Spain and down to Woodbrook. And in playing that trash can, people started gathering up all his members who were hiding away from some fight that took place. That was our stole. You know, I always say things in lectures that I say what I heard. What I say I'm sure of is what I've experienced, what I have done. I never like to comment very strongly on what I have heard. So I'm telling you that I heard this, a fight ensued in Duke Street. Lord Hamburger called his members back by trying to get them together to come back to Woodbrook, pick up a garbage can and started banging on it. And as a result of that, I will say to people, I think if that was the case, there was a steel band was born. It was born in a very primitive way by somebody beaten on a trash can to pick it, to march and create rhythm. Anyway, some months went by, a year went by. I was just about 9 or 10 years old. And I went up, I heard about the band practicing in Woodford Street. And I went up there, run away from school, and I went up to Woodford Street. I was going to a little school they called Akal School at the corner of, I think, Polkeru and Traggeries at the time. I run away from school an evening, and I run up to see the boys. I mean, see these young men playing the pans in this backyard in Woodford Street area. And I'm certain about that, but I saw this with my own eyes. So then playing the drums in a circle, I climb up on a kind of a tree, climbing over the fence to look down to see what was happening. And I could see these guys was fighting stick fight. I could remember that very vividly, the fighting stick fight, and they're beating these drums, and playing a little kind of a iron with it and bottles. And they fighting a stick and saying, curry, curry, wah, wah, something like that. I was a little boy. It gave me a lot of goosebumps to see what was taking place there. But I was, as I mentioned, about 10, 11. So I got so intrigued with that. I said, I want to be a part of that. But my family wouldn't let me because I'd be a part of no pandy, I mean, playing pan in the backyard anywhere because they were kind of concerned about it and they just didn't like me to be part of that. Because most of Port of Spain knew that this Alexander was playing pan up there. And I don't know who else in Port of Spain or St. James was playing the same garbage can, but I know Alexander was playing the garbage can because I saw them with my own eye. Paint tins and buckets and real bins of galvanized and grease barrels and whatnot. So I came down with this very strongly. I came down in the yard and I thought about it over and over. I wanted to be a part of it. So there was an old trash can hanging around about 1937, late 37, 38. So I started denting on it and playing on it as what I heard the boys doing up there. Only playing rhythm. I wasn't trying to create any notes. I had no knowledge about creating notes, but I started playing rhythm. And 1937, 38 came. The boys went back into carnival and played the garbage cans. I never was a part of it in Port of Spain because I was too young. So I formed a little band like 1939 to 40. We got a lot of trash cans from around the area. And we formed a little band and called ourselves the Oval Boys. The reason why we did that, called ourselves Oval Boys, because we were working in the Oval, the Queen's Park Oval, where we field tennis and cricket and all this kind of a thing. So we called ourselves the Oval Boys. So we formed the band in late 39, I think, or 40. And we started playing all rhythm in the panyard. During that time, little bands start popping up all over St. James and Belmont and wherever. So they, for some reason, we started to have little contests. All the little trash can bands began to have contests, playing like in Rialto Theatre and the Roxy Theatre and in the Queen's Park Oval itself and Olympic Theatre, different places. And the drums really began to take form. And I understood, I'm not quite sure, I understood, as it was alleged that a gentleman by the name of Spree Simon played the first notes that make musical sense on one of these cans. I heard that, and I think that was around 1938, 39. Spree Simon was getting melody, three or four melody notes on one of those cans, and it was convex at the time. So as I heard that, I think I had a very ingenious little mind. I got excited and I tried to dent my drum also to try to create pitches on tones on it. I couldn't do it. I went to Carnage one time. They had a bunch of boys from all over the place in Carnage playing pan. I can't remember exactly what it was in Carnage, some festive day. But my little band was down there. We had Tripoli, I think. Some band from Long Circular, I think, was a Sun Valley. They had a number of bands down in the area. I cannot remember exactly who they were. But I saw Sonny Roach, a guy by the name of Sonny Roach. I saw him with a small pan and was playing notes on the small pan. Clear notes, very clear. Shortly after that, after that affair in Carnage, I came up to St. James. Down by the Transport Savannah, there's a backyard there that Tripoli used to practice in. And I saw another little guy by the name of Granville, also playing notes on a small pan, like three or four notes, consecutive notes. So I said, how could they get it? And I can't. So I tried some of everything and I couldn't get my small drums to create consecutive notes. So in 1941, I turned the drum from convex to concave. And this is a known fact. If anybody want to contest that, well, so be it. But it's a known fact in the island that I tuned my drums from convex into concave, 1941. And they gave me jokes about it and said all kind of silly things. I was making a baby's bath pan and whatnot. But anyway, I continued making my drum into concave. And as I did that, I could master the notes a little bit better than the convex. So I started putting on four notes and five notes on these little pan and trying to get pitches. I cannot say I was playing any particular song, but I was getting notes, and I could play like Mary Had a Little Lamb and River Vine Vine, little folk song and whatnot. But during that period, we had no carnival celebration because they stopped the carnival celebration from Europe. They stopped it in 1940. I think it was the last one, 41, something like that. So between 42, 43, 44, those 3 years, we had no carnival. Instead of parading the streets, we held a lot of little contests in different parts of the country, in San Fernando, Skinner's Park, Horace Promenade, in Olympic, as I mentioned before, St. James Rialto, Roxy Theater, and all over the place, inside the Queen's Park Oval itself. And so the drums begin to develop. I began to get five notes. I couldn't get any more than five on the small pans that I was working with. So I created, 1944, I got what you call the sweet oil drum from Laventy. I got a sweet oil drum and I made nine notes from it. In 1943-44, I increased the size of the drums from the regular painting and grease barrels, which is about 14 gallons and 18 gallons, into a 35-gallon drum. I don't know who else was around Port of Spain was doing it I really don't care, but I know I was doing it. I went around the sweet oil factory area in Lavender Road, and I got the sweet oil drum, one of them, and I built a 9-notes instrument. And it was really a real good drum, better than most of anybody, but he had around Port of Spain at the time. And due to the fact it was such a good drum, I called it a bad instrument, and I called it the Barracuda. And I think the entire Port of Spain knew what the Barracuda was. So you might hear all sort of slander and talk about who did what. I built the Barracuda for 9 notes, and it was a 35-gallon drum. The drum became a drum that had some kind of a fame and popularity around Port of Spain. And everybody was talking about the Barracuda. And VJ Victory in Japan, I think it was, in Port of Spain, I think it was May, the government gave us an opportunity to celebrate because we could not celebrate the streets from 41, I think, to 44. So 1945, we came out on the street with this band, with our little band, well developed at the time, Oval Boys. We turned our name from Oval Boys to Night Invaders. Then it became the Invaders, and then the Shell Invaders. So it had a kind of a trend that took place. So Invaders was in the street for Carnival, the kind of a celebration that the government gave us the privilege to play that VJ night. And we went up in the Port of Spain, at the corner of Duke Street, at the corner of Duke and Charlotte. We just turned Duke from Charlotte, going towards, I think, George Street, I think it was. And some of the band was coming opposite. And I don't know what happened up front, but all I knew, people were stampeding, coming back into the back of the band. And my drum fell over, I don't know, because I had it playing up in the air like this, because we never put any straps around it at the time. Later on, we put pan around the neck with a big pan. But this one was being held up, playing with one hand, sometimes under your arms. So my drum fell, and somebody took it up. I don't know who took it up. So everybody scattered and run every direction to try to get away from this big old fight. And I got home without my drum that night. And then the next day I was told by people, oh, your drum is hanging up in John John on a tree. And they say, if you want your drum, come get it. So I say, I'm not going to John John to get any pan, because I sure, if I go up there, they're going to beat me up, you know, because I know they're always out for my head anyway, because I'm making these drums they call sweet pan. So I didn't go for the Barracuda. So I wanted to build another drum, because we had these little contests taking place everywhere. So I wanted to build another drum, and I built a 55-gallon drum into a musical instrument in 1946. I have heard recently, I think on a newspaper, that somebody built a drum in 1940. What I will say to that is, gentlemen, is if the first drum was convex in 1941, which was a small pan, if this gentleman who said he built a big drum in 1940, that means he have to have made a big drum into convex, and is virtually impossible to build a big drum convex. So from 46 to 49, a lot of things began to happen. All the other steel bands began to gather up big drums and try to create the big pans as I did. So the art form really began to blossom. The Trinidad government come to realize that the steel bands is doing well with regards to tonal quality. So they wanted to show this work to London. So they began to talk in terms of gathering a national steel band to take them to London to take part in the Festival of Britain. So in 1950, they got one player from several of the band. I think 11 of us started off from Sun Valley and from Invaders and from Tokyo and from Free French, Casablanca, Cinco Peters, I think, something like that. I could call the names of the people if you want me to. Sonny Roach, Tony Williams from the St. James area. Sterling Betancourt was also from St. James. I was from the Woodbrook area, Ellie Manette. We have, from on the hill, was Andrew de Labesti from a band called Hill 60. And Free Simon from Tokyo, I think it was. And we had a guy by the name of Dudley Smith from Sunland, I think it was. And they had Fillmore Davidson. It's either from the Casablanca or the Cinco Peters band, Fillmore Davidson. So those were the people. And then one other guy from San Fernando, two of them from San Fernando, One was from the band they called the Free French, that was Theodore Stephen, and one from a band they used to call Coco Boys, that's Belgrove Bonaparte. So these were the people that went to England. Incidentally, when we got to Barbados, one of the guys got sick, Sonny Roche got sick, and they have to turn back. He has to turn back, he got real ill. So instead of going to England with 11, we went with 10. But how we went to England was, we brought in a gentleman from Antigua, they call Lieutenant Griffith, to train the band to go to England. The band was a bunch of guys just having their own pattern and their own style and their own way of tuning, and nobody really had chromatic. What chromatic was, none of us really knew. I also heard somebody say we had chromatic, which has also been ridiculous, because Lieutenant Griffith told us how to make chromatic when he came to coach the band. And he said, well, you are more like a premier junior here because you more or less started this thing, and I want you to build chromatic. And I said, what is chromatic? And he explained to me what is chromatic. And we built half tones in successions. I built my drum for myself, and I built a drum for Dudley Smith, which is a cello, two drums, and I built Belgrave Bonaparte, a second part for him. And I built three basses that I played, they're called boots. And the other people built their own drum. Tony Williams built his own cello. Theodore Stevens built his own lead. Patsy Haynes, I forget him, Patsy Haynes was built by some guy they called Croppy. Spree Simon built his own drum. Andrew DeLapasty built his own drum. So we went to England with a whole bunch of different patterns. Everybody had their own patterns that they can play. However, it was all chromatic. We went to England in 1951 and played all over London and elsewhere, Edinburgh and Leeds and Liverpool, different places. After leaving England, we went to Paris and spent a few months in Paris playing in a circus they called Medrano, Circus Medrano. And from there, we came home. Of course, we had other opportunities to go on to Italy, but a number of the boys wanted to come home. And let me say, when I was offered a scholarship in 1949, I did not turn it down. I just said to the governor, well, it's a pleasure for me to go to England to study music. I will surely go and accept my scholarship. So I did not go to England until I went with the TASPO band. TASPO was formed, Lieutenant Griffiths coached us in the Cockeridge Youth Center. And we set out to do a lot of performances around the island, especially in Port of Spain and St. James, Belmont area, to raise funds to go. And we did go to England and enjoyed England as much as we can. During the course of the time I was in England, a guy the name of Alfonso, who was in charge of the TASPO band as our manager, who was getting all the engagements for us, he called the university to find out if the scholarship was still open for me. And they said yes, and the requirements are so-and-so. They told me what my requirements are to come to enter the university. And I told my friends, I am not going to take the scholarship. I'm going to continue playing with the band, and I'm going to go back home. So we toured England extensively and Scotland. And then we went back to Paris and then came back to the islands. When we came back to the islands in 1952, we were all very knowledgeable now about what is chromatic. And I decided now I'm going to expand the range of the single second to a double second. And I did that in 1952, which I created the whole tone second pan. I also heard someone else did the second pan. So I said, show me the pattern and I will agree. If you can't show me, shut up. I bought the second pan in 1952, which is established today all across the United States and in Trinidad. My old tone second pan is being played, Ellie Manet's second pan. So whoever said they did something, they did not establish it. I did it. In 1954, I made a double guitar. I also heard that I used some quattro pan that Neville Jules did, and get the idea from Neville Jules and a quattro pan to make a double guitar. Let me tell you what a double guitar was. When I went to England, I made two drums for Tony Williams. I made a double cello. And for, not Tony Williams, Dudley Smith. Tony Williams built his own double cello, and I built a double cello for Dudley Smith. The same identical pattern of the cello that I built to go to England for Dudley, I came home And I built it over and I cut it short. Because when we went to England, we had three-quarter length. When I came back home, I had I cut the cello down. I built the same drum all over and I cut it from the 27 to 14 inches long. And I call it a guitar. So the Quattro Pan that Neville Julius spoke about, I really don't know what he's talking about. And if it was there before, I never had a guitar built before, a double guitar built before I came back from England. And as I said, I built a double cello to go to England. I came back and I built that same double cello all over and I cut it down and called it a guitar. So that's my story. That's the facts as it is. And today in Trinidad, they're still using that pattern of the double guitar. Later on in 1956, I brought in triple cello. I put in what you call the diminished cello. I don't know if anybody will want to contest that accomplishment of mine. 1956 and in 1958, instead of using a double guitar, I say let me increase this double into a triple guitar. So I use in a triple guitar. In 1959, I made what you call a tenor bass. And the first band I established tenor bass for was a band I called Starland. A little Chinese band used to be at the corner, I think in St. Vincent, just close to Park Street and Tragedy Road. There was a band in a yard there by, I think it's a garage called Batu Garage, a mechanic place. The band was practicing in a yard called Starland. Some little Chinese boys, and I built the first tenor basses for those guys. And then later on, I built a national steel band and I include the tenor basses there. That is 1959. But now, the basses grew like this. We came back from England with three bass drums. And right after England, I built basses and I add two more. And we have five bass drums. The lowest note is a C. And that went all through the island for a long time until I went to the United States. And in 1967, I left to come to the United States and I met a gentleman by the name of Jimmy Layden. And he said, these five notes barrel is not carrying enough power and punch. You should make a six bass barrel. And he helped me to orchestrate the design of the six bass barrel and fourths and fifths, B flat to F, B to E, C to G, D to A, C sharp to A flat, E flat to B flat, E flat to A flat. So in that sense, it's a fourth and fifth. And those basses is my designer basses. If they want to claim that, go right ahead. But these are the things that I have done with no question about it. I did the Invaders pattern, which you call a low lead, with F sharp in the middle, that all the professionals play, Bugsy Sharp, Robert Greenidge, Ray Holman, Andy Norell. That's the first lead that I have built. The lead that I built for the first time, 1946, is an expansion of that lead that Andy Narell and I was playing today. Because when I built the first lead, it was only 14 notes. And as the year began to go, I began to add notes, and I add notes, and I add notes. And when I went to England, I had full chromatic, and I had the F-sharp in the middle. From 1946 to 1951, we had full chromatic on that low lead, which is when I play in England, and we had the F-sharp in the middle, and fully chromatic. And I began to develop the skills. I have to tune them properly. And it grew. Andy Norell liked it. Ray Holman liked it. Robert Greenidge liked it. And those people always play those drums. And it's kind of very wild and confused. So when Tony Williams did come in with the spiderweb, I gave him all the credit in the world because he brought in more or less a more musical instrument with regards to its context of musical criteria. So he brought in something that was very significant. Tony Williams brought in the spiderweb. And Bertie Marshall, well, I give him the credit. I never tried to deny him. He brought in the double tenor, which is a kind of scattered majors and minors. Mm-hmm. And that was exceptionally well done as far as I'm concerned. And to the extent that Lennox Spear wanted my spiderweb, my low lead, and he wanted Bertie Marshall double tenor, I think to put in the Victoria Institute. And I don't know if he did or not, but when I remember all the controversy about who built the first drum, I remember I went to a world fair in Canada, in Montreal, and I had a booth. And I saw my drum in the booth, Eli Manette drum, first drum built by Eli Manette in 1904 and so 46. I saw the drum in the booth as depicting as a product of Trinidad. I came in about 1938 as a little boy, started playing on a trash can. 1939, I tried to get some groups together and form a little band we call Oval Boys. In 1940, I heard all of these people playing pans and notes on it like Spree and Sonny Roach and Granville. I could not do it. So in 1941, I pushed my pan into a concave. I went on to develop the pan from 3 or 4 notes into 5 and to 9 notes. The 9 notes came when I developed the sweet oil drum in 1944. And as I mentioned, I was with a little Carrie Beryl McBurney, and she felt that the drums was too harsh with wooden sticks. So we talk about that all the time. And I wrapped my sticks in 1944. I don't care who did what, wherever. Let them show me the documentation. But I wrapped my sticks in 44. And I built a Barracuda in 45. We played on the street. They took it away from me in 45. As a result of that, it encouraged me to build a big 55-gallon drum, which I did in 1946. In 1947, I built a single second. In 48, I built the single guitar. I got a scholarship in 1949. I went to England, participated with TASPO, and we came back in 1951, and my knowledge was much larger than when I went. I developed the whole tone second pan in 52, the double guitar in 54, the triple cellos in 56, then the double triple guitar in 58, the tenor band in 59, and we increased it. Basically, we came from England. We're doing that interim. We increased the basses from 3 barrels to 5 barrels. And in 1970, I created the 6 bass barrel, which is now being established across the nation as 4ths and 5ths. I did it. They could say whatever, I did it. And lately, at recent time, I did a new instrument we call the quaduet. It's an expansion of the second pan, a double up of the second pan. We play the bass line and we play the soprano and tenor line into one instrument. We play all 4 lines, all 4 parts of music into that one instrument. We play bass, tenor, alto, soprano into the one instrument. And incidentally, that instrument is played with the same stick. And I'm going to bring that instrument and prove it to the nation. When everybody says it can't be done, I'm going to bring it shortly and I'm going to prove it.